Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
From the headlines to the silver screen to a courtroom in Boston, the long-awaited trial of accused crime boss James Whitey Bulger is underway in Boston. Many, many people believe this day would never come and that Bulger's mythology and image would remain in popular culture, like Jack Nicholson's portrayal of a Bulger-like character in the movie The Departed.
Those guys you tuned up, they're connected down Providence. What they're gonna do is come back with some guys and kill you. Which, sure as you're born, they will do, unless I stop them. Do you want me to stop him?
Is this something I can't do personally?
Jack Nicholson and Leo DiCaprio there. Even Big Jack, though, fades in comparison to the real Bulger, one of the nation's most wanted fugitives, up there with Osama bin Laden for years. After 16 years on the run, Bulger was caught in California. He's 83 years old now. He stands accused of having a hand in the murders of 19 people, some while he was working for federal investigators as an informant. Reporters with the Boston Globe back in 1988 first revealed Bulger's role as an FBI informant. Dick Lehr was a reporter for the Boston Globe for almost two decades. He's co-authored two books about Bulger, his latest, a biography called Whitey, The Life of America's Most Notorious Mob Boss. Dick Lehr, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Take us into this character. I mean, are we going to see much of what you've discovered in following him for so many years?
In many ways, I think his legal defense that he's putting forth is a reflection of Whitey himself. And by that, I mean, it's been established that Whitey's a psychopath and he's a supreme narcissist. And in tracing his life story, one of the themes of his life is that I'm not as bad as everyone's made me out to be. I'm a good bad guy. And his defense is, like I say, an echo of that. He's trying to portray himself as not an informant. There's all this pretzel logic out there. I'm not an informant, but also the FBI and the government gave me legal immunity to commit my crimes, in effect a license to kill. In exchange for his underworld intelligence, he's arguing that the FBI and a federal prosecutor promised him immunity, not only for past crimes, but for future crimes. It's, you know, to some lawyers I talk to, laugh out loud. It's unheard of. But Whitey will say and do anything. You know, if you're coming from Whitey Bulger and you've been protected all these years by a corrupt band of agents, I do understand why he has this sense of entitlement. He was protected on the street, but it doesn't mean corruption is lawful.
Is this part of the narcissism, thinking he has some special get-out-of-jail-free card? And how does that narcissism play? I mean, we all know narcissists, very few of whom have, you know, allegedly killed 19 people.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, it goes back to his formative years. Every time he was arrested, he found a way of avoiding any real consequence. So he developed this, you know, larger-than-life sense of himself early on. And the climax of it being from the mid-70s into the early 90s, when indeed he had corrupted a band of FBI agents in Boston, so they in effect served as his palace guard, tipping him off, protecting him, insulating him from other law enforcement investigations. You know, who wouldn't feel special under those circumstances when you have the nation's top law enforcement agency in effect part of your gang?
Did you, in the course of your investigation and your long sort of connection with this story, ever get the sense that you understood his power over people, his sort of personal charm being ability, you know, giving him an ability to make people do things that they would never do for anyone else?
Yeah, no, I think I have after all these years. And in terms of interviews with people who lived near him and around him, whether it was during his boyhood years or his neighbors in Santa Monica, where he did hide in plain sight under the alias of Charlie Gasco for 14 years. Yeah, he's a very effective, charming guy in creating what I call a comfort zone around him immediately, where he seems, as Charlie Gasco, for example, friendly old guy next door who would be conversational, offer him a token gift and whatnot. He seemed nice that way. But this is the same guy. I mean, beware of Whitey kindness, of Whitey love, because in an instant, if he sensed betrayal or if he sensed trouble, I mean, he would kill you.
Where does he stand in terms of his own legend? Are there places in Boston where he's revered in some sense, or has he lost all of his old constituency from the days when Boston had a different reputation than it does today?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I mean, one of the interesting things about him is that he is 83. He's had a long shelf life. And in studying Whitey's life, you realize there are many phases, many masks of Whitey Bulger. And until the truth came out that he was actually an informant for many years, he had this reputation, and which is now myth, that he was kind of a Robin Hood figure in Boston in the 70s and 80s. Again, kind of the good, bad guy, this charming gangster. Well, that's been blown out of the water. And anyone who holds on to that image of Whitey Bulger, that mask of Whitey, is living in denial.
As an 83-year-old, it's kind of hard to evaluate what a life sentence would mean for Bulger at this point. Do you think he looks across that courtroom or will be looking across that courtroom and basically saying, I defeated you all. Do what you want with
yeah.
me. But
oh,
I
yeah.
want...
No, I think we write at the end of our book when he was first brought back to Boston in June of 2011. And he walked into, you know, the courthouse for the first time and his younger brother Bill was there. And they traded a look that I, for the life of me, believe that's what they were. Look how far we've gotten. And we did it our way. Now, I think he's fully engaged in this trial. I mean, this is, you know, this is the last hurrah for him, no question. He's toast. But it doesn't mean he's not fully engaged in the strategy and the power play and trying to push back and assert his own control over the situation. That's what has motivated him. That's what makes his heart beat, I think, throughout his life, is power, control, staying one step ahead in the game that he's chosen to play, even though the circumstances might change, from being crime boss, being pursued by police, being a fugitive from justice, being pursued, you know, when he's Charlie Gasco, and now in the courtroom, being a defendant, being pursued by prosecutors trying to bring him to justice.
Dick Lehr is a journalism professor at Boston University, former reporter for the Boston Globe, and the co-author of two books on James Whitey Bulger, including Whitey, The Life of America's Most Notorious Mob Boss, and Black Mass, The True Story of an Unholy Alliance Between the FBI and the Irish Mob. Dick, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.